Welcome to the Call the Vet Show, the podcast that helps pet parents understand and optimize the health of their furry family so they can live the full and happy life you want for them. And here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Alex Avery.
Hello, kia ora. Welcome to another episode of the Call the Vet Show and the first episode for 2023, which is kind of crazy, especially as we're on episode 137 as well. So the start of the year, with all of the different platforms that we often get a year in review emailed through, and with the podcast it was no different. And to be honest, I was quite surprised with what these top five episodes were. You know, I never quite know what is going to resonate with people out there in internet or audio land, and I really do try to give a mixture of information that you want to find out more about, you know, you want to learn more about, as well as information that I think you really need but just didn't realize that you needed it. And sometimes the content that I bring you, as in one of the examples that I'll be bringing you later on in this episode, are topics that I am really still kind of mulling over in my head and, kind of formulating my opinions on, really more conversational pieces that hopefully aren't rambling, but just based on that singular idea. Other times it's really short, sharp pieces of content, and clearly, I also rely on a large number of expert guests who really do bring their A game to the podcast and deliver some incredibly valuable, incredibly actionable information, as you'll hear. Reflecting back on the last 12 months meant that I dived deep into these episodes. I revisited them, and I thought it would be valuable for you to take out some nuggets from each episode and re-present them here. So whether you have listened to all of the episodes in the past, in which case you definitely deserve a gold medal, or you're joining me for the first time, or you've just become aware of the Call the Vet Show and you've missed out on some of these previous episodes, there's going to be definitely some take-home nuggets, and they might even encourage you to dive back into the archive. But just before we get into that, if you are new, then I'm Dr. Alex. I'm a veterinarian in general practice living in the wonderful Aotearoa, New Zealand, originally from the UK, as you can probably tell by my accent. But I also bring you this podcast. So if you are a pet parent who wants to know the best way to care for your furry family member, how to make sure they stay as healthy as possible, how to avoid some of the most common injuries and illnesses that I see every day in the vet clinic, as well as how to tackle some of the curveballs, the challenges that life may throw at them, you definitely want to be following this podcast. So hit that follow, hit that subscribe button to make sure that you don't miss out on any future episodes. And with that out of the way, let's get into the first episode of the year, as I bring you a clip from the episode that was the fifth most popular of the last 12 months.
And now, on with the show.
Whenever I run tests, whenever I'm recommending an investigation, kind of plan a course of action, I always like to think, what difference is this test going to make in the way we're going to treat the animal in front of us with the problem that they're presenting with? Because it's very easy to just kind of keep going down a path where we want to make a specific diagnosis. We want to make a specific diagnosis, but it can get to a stage where actually, whether the results are positive or negative, the treatment is going to remain the same. But the cost of trying to put a specific name on the condition may then actually compromise the ability to afford subsequent treatments that might be needed. Now, that's not to say that it's wrong to try and make a specific diagnosis, and in the majority of cases, it's certainly the right thing to do. But I think we need to be aware of this as a potential issue and really focus on the animal in front of us, the pet's problem, and how we can focus on providing them with the best care so that the outcome is the best for them. And I guess the last thing that I'd like you to consider today when thinking of this as a topic is that we shouldn't just dismiss options, B, C, or D as completely inferior, and we really want to focus on A as being the best option. That's what the vet's recommending and they're saying is the best option, and that is the only thing that we should be considering. don't be shy of talking to your vet about maybe financial restraints, but also physical restraints. You know, there really is no point in me dispensing a whole raft of medications just because they're the best thing if you're not actually able to get them into your cat or dog. You need to be honest with your vet, and your vet needs to be honest with you about what the outcome's going to be, how the prognosis differs between different options. And it may well be that actually option B or C was the gold standard best level of care only a few years previously. And so that hasn't made it less effective than it used to be. So that was a clip from Call the Vet episode number 117, where I kind of started the conversation that maybe the increase in the standard of veterinary care isn't all it's cracked up to be, and how it actually may be responsible for killing pets and harming their overall health. So this was definitely a topic where I was and continue to mull over this idea. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And then the fourth most popular episode was number 130 with the wonderful Dr. Charisse Roth. And we dived into the world of telemedicine, of telehealth, of remote veterinary consultations, how you can get veterinary advice, get veterinary care, and even prescriptions and medications in some instances from a veterinarian without having to step foot into the clinic. We spoke a lot about the pitfalls and the care that you need to take when you're choosing a telemedicine provider, but we also spoke about the benefits to your pet and to you as the pet parent about this new service.
Actually, I kind of separate it out into three categories as far as the benefits of telehealth: the pet or the animal, depending on if it's not actually a pet, the pet parent or the animal owner, and the medical professional that is seeing the calls and working in the consultations, because there's benefits to all three. So for the pet, we'll talk about primarily small animal because that's where my wheelhouse is for the most part. This is going to be something that we're allowing that pet to have a voice in what's happening with them. Their pet parent knows what they're seeing, but may not always be able to interpret that. It's the very classic, hey doc, I'm coming in. My dog is limping, but he's not painful. Yeah. Right. It allows us to lend that voice to the information that the pet parent has. And often it's that voice, that level of advocacy, that is so important for the pet. But you know what? Vomiting once may not be that big of a deal, but if it's vomiting once and the gums are white and it's fallen over, that's a whole different set of, you know, it's a whole different story. And so it allows us to give voice and give credence to the things that are happening inside that pet, so that the pet parent knows better on how to read it, how to understand the things that they're seeing and interpret it more clearly. So from the pet parent side, there is this sense of honestly being quite alone. Like if you're up at 2 o'clock in the morning and this little furry critter that you love is having a hard time, there is an immense feeling of being alone. And I liken it to when I was a new mom, human mom, and they've sent me home with this little person and it's crying and something is clearly wrong because it's making it sound like it's the end of the world. What the heck am I supposed to do? Do I try and give them something that helps me feel better, i.e. a human medication, or do I go to the emergency room because it feels like this is an emergency? And so what we have carved out is this ability to calm if there is a sense of that is needed. Hey, you know what? Yes, this is actually an emergency, but you get time to take a deep breath. Here are three things that you can be doing right now to help your pet feel better, even in an emergency, to help them get to the next stage of whatever their care looks like.
Sure.
Or it's actually, you know what? This isn't an emergency. Go back to sleep. Be prepared the next day to start calling vet clinics to see if that's a place that you can get into. But this actually isn't an emergency. We can save those emergency dollars towards more total care for that pet in the long run. And that's just kind of the acute aspects of it. The other part that I really love about the benefits to the pet parent in telehealth, especially kind of how we do it at Fuzzy, is this everyday wellness component of you don't have to guess anymore. That's the part for me of like, oh, is that a cut? Do I wrap that up? Do I leave it alone? Am I supposed to be feeding this or that? You know, all of those sorts of those daily decisions that we wish we were in the pet aisle to slap a food out of the pet parent's hand and go, no, that's terrible. Don't feed them that. Well, we get to be that, you know, that we can literally have people on video with us as they're walking through the pet food aisle and saying, oh, is this a good option? It has a dog that looks like my dog, right? And then we get to have the conversations of, well, actually, you know, you have a puppy and this is senior food and this is why nutritionally this is not going to align with what your goals are for your pet. And so it allows them to make the right decisions on a daily basis rather than just the acute.
Number three and episode number 129 was all about anxiety, how to eliminate anxiety in your pet. But before you can eliminate it, you need to know actually what is causing your pet to be anxious. And actually, some of the causes are very common, but are hidden and are quite unexpected. So first, the causes of anxiety. Now, the first one is going to be lack of socialization. So here, that's just a lack of experiencing life in general, all the different sights, the sounds, the environments, the experiences, the people, the vehicles, everything that a dog or a cat should be experienced and exposed to in the early stages of life. And here we're talking kind of from about 10 to 16, you know, possibly 20 weeks of age. Their brains are just like little sponges. They just suck everything up, accept it as normal. They develop coping strategies should they come across something new or unfamiliar when they get older. And you know, it's really important that we're intentional. There's a lot of intentionality about the socialization experience that, again, both our dogs and cats are subjected to. We tend to think of it as a dog, dog job, if you like, when you get a puppy, but absolutely cats, it's the same thing, introducing them to the carry cage, the car, their harness, their collar. If you want to walk your dog, walk your cat, you know, on a lead, then absolutely exposing your kitten to that in the early stages is incredibly important. And if we have a lack of socialization, then that could be catastrophic, because it will generally lead to anxiety, and certainly anxiety of new experiences. It can lead to phobias. So we've got our, you know, firework phobia, for example, or our storm phobias. It can also lead to separation anxiety, which can result in a lot of destruction of property, and they can cause some pretty serious damage to themselves as well. And it can lead to aggression, fear aggression, and other really serious life-limiting problems. And actually, if we take away our infectious diseases that are vaccine preventable, so things like our parvovirus, then actually the biggest cause of death in young dogs is because of behavioral issues that result in many cases from this lack of socialization. Now, that's not always going to be the case, and actually previous bad experiences can also cause a lot of behavioral issues. And that's the same with anxiety as well. You know, sometimes it doesn't bear thinking about what's happened to some of our rescue pets, for example, you know, what they've been through in their past. It's really heartbreaking, some stories that, you know, I'm sure you've heard or seen on social media as well. But previous bad experiences absolutely can lead to just a general anxiety, or anxiety in certain specific situations. The big cause of anxiety, and some phobias, and certainly kind of fear and phobias of loud noises is definitely one, but anxiety can be caused by pain. And that's both acute in the short term, but more common situation here is actually chronic pain, so long-term uncontrolled pain. But then any other chronic diseases can also result in anxiety. I'm thinking here allergies, so being itchy all the time. We almost do need to think of that, or we should be thinking of that, as being painful all the time. It is incredibly irritating. It has an incredibly negative impact on quality of life, and frequently results in anxiety. We can also think of hormonal problems, so thyroid problems, Cushing's disease, which is an increase in stress hormone throughout the body, and clearly that is kind of indicating to the body that it's under a lot of stress. You can imagine how much anxiety can be produced as a result of that. So we don't want to think of anxiety as just a behavioral issue, if you like. We really need to consider that there may be something kind of completely seemingly separate that is triggering this anxiety, another medical issue that if we're not addressing properly, if we're not getting to the root cause, you know, how can we hope to properly manage and eliminate that dog or cat's anxiety level? So that's something that you really should be thinking about if you do recognize that your dog has an anxiety at certain times or all the time, or but you've noticed it increasing and becoming more of a problem than it was ever before. You know, those are all indications that maybe there's actually more to this than meets the eye. At number two, and I wasn't surprised that this episode was top of the list. One, because the quality of my guest, Dr. Kasara Andre, was fabulous, and she just brought a huge wealth of knowledge and experience to this topic, but also the topic itself, which was CBD, cannabis, and its use in the treatment of a vast array of different conditions that our pets can suffer from. And also she broke down a lot of the confusion, a lot of the maybe misinformation that is out there. And we started really from the very basics, you know, what is CBD? What is cannabis? What are cannabinoids? And also how can you go about choosing a product that is actually reliable and is safe?
There's hundreds and hundreds of cannabinoid molecules, and we just kind of know about those two prominent ones. That's what's in all the news and all the media, and everyone's really excited about. There's actually a lot of minor cannabinoids that we're finding a lot of use for clinically. They're really, really fun to work with.
Okay. Oh, cool. So, and are they like how different do like maybe CBD oil products, you know, well, how do they differ from the ones with THC? Do they have all of the other cannabinoids in them, or is there a marked difference in what their profile is?
It's kind of anybody's game. It's actually really hard to know what's in the product because not all of the industry comes at this from a medical-minded perspective. Any pet parent who's beginning to dabble in the cannabis realm will know that sometimes pretty marketing or pretty branding is really what tries to win the day. And when you really try to drill down and see which molecules are actually in this product, what's actually contained in it, sometimes it can be really tough to find out. So what we ask for from a medical perspective is a certificate of analysis. It's just like asking for blood work on a patient to know where all of your internal organs, how they're working. So same thing, we ask for a COA, certificate of analysis, on every product that we're going to work with or the pet parent wants to bring in. And essentially that answers the question that you said, what molecules are in here, whether it came from the hemp side or the marijuana side, it doesn't really matter until you see that COA for the product that's actually going to be administered. And then you know which molecules you're working with.
Sure. And I think some certainly websites, I mean, a lot of people shop online and, you know, mm-hmm. CBD for my dog is probably a pretty common Google search if we're looking in this area. A lot of websites will have that kind of prominently displayed, or they'll have an FAQ or something with that analysis, an ideally independent analysis on there. What kind of things should they be looking for? I mean, it's often highlighting the THC component to prove that it is a CBD rather than another product, isn't it?
What's all in there? Well, I will say first off, if you find the COA prominently displayed, that product already gets a gold star. They're already high on the list in my book, because it really is a good defining factor. If you can't find a COA, or you can't get one just by calling or emailing, if it's hard, you know, if you have to dig through a bunch of layers, I would look for a different product. There are a lot of companies that are great, doing a great job out there and making that lab result really available. So if you can't find it, just switch to a different product. And so, yes, the molecular profile, the molecules that are actually in the product, is a prominent piece of the COA. But even more than that is probably the freedom from information. So is it free from heavy metals? Is it free from pesticides? Is it free from mold, bacteria? Those are things that you'll also find on the COA. And together, that lack of the bad, and then which molecules you're actually using, you really need both of those together to give you a clinical picture of what it's going to do in the patient.
And what I love about that information that Dr. Kassara was discussing with me is that this really applies to pretty much any supplement out there. The supplement industry is full of bad actors. There's a lot of products that really are not worth your time and not worth your money, but it can be really hard to pick a valuable supplement that actually works and is going to be a huge benefit to your pet and choose that over something that is just pretty marketing and basically selling you a bunch of lies. And then at number one, the most popular episode for last year, the previous 12 months, was all about the holistic control of allergies in dogs. You know, itchy dogs, that's probably one of the, if not the most common problem that we see, or certainly chronic long-term problem that we see in the veterinary clinic. So it's no surprise that this episode resonated with so many people. Holistic is a real buzzword out there. It's actually one of my pet hates, because I think the holistic, in inverted commas, practitioners have hijacked it, and really it doesn't necessarily mean what it should do. Yeah, I guess that's what I launch into at the beginning, before then discussing all of the different things other than pharmaceuticals that we can give our allergic pets to keep them itch-free and as happy as possible. So very often as vets, we're accused of just chucking some pharmaceuticals, some drugs at our patients that are a temporary band-aid, that are simply suppressing the symptoms rather than addressing the root cause of a dog's illness or disease. Now, I'd argue against that strongly, and never more so than with allergies. So there are a number of very effective interventions, management strategies, changes in the environment and home that you can make for your dog's life that's going to help control their itch, eliminate their itch, reduce their inflammation, improve their skin quality, and ultimately make the impact of their allergic disease hugely reduced. It may actually even eliminate or completely cure their allergies completely. Yes, pharmaceuticals do play a role. So having said we don't just chuck pharmaceuticals, we do use them. And when they're used appropriately, they offer your dog the best chance of being itch-free as quickly as possible, and they can help your dog remain itch-free while all of these other strategies are taking effect. Because the other thing is that a lot of these strategies, they do take weeks to sometimes several months to kick in for the effects to truly be seen, to have the effect on the body that they are going to do all those things that we want, to reduce the itch, to improve the skin quality, to make their coat shiny and glossy and nicely hydrated. But while that's happening, we want our dogs to be comfortable, because make no mistake, being itchy all the time, even if their skin doesn't seem that inflamed, being itchy all the time is just like being in pain. You know, I see it all the time in my patients that are brought to the vet clinic. If their itch has gone untreated for any length of time, they are miserable. They are definitely not living their best life. And so in my mind, you know, we would always give a dog in pain painkillers, wouldn't we? So why would we not give an itchy dog kind of anti-itch medication while everything else is kicking in?
Helping your pet live the happy, healthy life they deserve.
So I hope you enjoyed that little trip down memory lane, and those little clips gave you some real actionable advice and maybe thoughts for the future. And you know, that's what this podcast is all about. So all that's left for me to do is to wish you a very happy new year, a happy and healthy 2023, a one that I hope I can spend some time with you as well. So until the next episode, I'm veterinarian Dr. Alex. This is the Call the Vet Show. Make sure you're subscribed. And until the next time, take care.
That's it for this episode of the Call the Vet Show. Be sure to visit callthevet.org to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. We'll see you next time.